The Fan on Demand.
Friday, the 12th of September, 2014, hour number two of the radio program. It's the Friday edition of the Roundtable. Well, all the roundtables are on Friday, pretty much. I'm Bob McCown. That is Stephen Brent right there. That's Ken Reed over here. And that's Dave Perkins way down there. We welcome you all to the program. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. Some of it serious, some of it not so serious. Some breaking news that we're still dealing with, trying to track down. I mentioned just before the break, Fox Houston is reporting the Vikings running back Adrian Peterson has been indicted in Montgomery County, Texas, for reckless or negligent injury to a child. Apparently, Peterson's cooperating with law enforcement. He'll have to turn himself into authorities. He missed practice yesterday. Mike Zimmer, the coach, called it a, quote, veteran day, unquote. And I think in light of what we've been going through the last little while, there should be some questions about what the coach may have known in calling this a Veterans Day. This whole notion of kind of covering things up is really front of mind right now. But we'll get to we assume we'll get more on that in the hours ahead. If not during this program, then later. But we'll keep an eye on it. Let's start with. The Toronto Maple Leafs and Tim Lewicki, who spoke at Ryerson University, and among the things he said was that he now, that the MLSE, or as an organization, has players who have great numbers but terrible character. He was no more specific than that. He did not even point to any particular segment of his organization. Should we assume that this is a sweeping statement? Should we assume, people immediately assumed it was the Toronto Maple Leafs he was referring to? Brunt?
I have no idea what that means, actually. You know, if they've got great numbers, then they would have great numbers, right? That would suggest that they are stars in whichever team they play. And so their character would be kind of their character. And I'm not sure what he means by character. Because, you know, the other side of it is he's saying there are people with great character who have presumably less skill who managed to have glorious careers, right? I think that's
I think you added glorious.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's glorious.
Does he mean they're bad people who score a lot of goals? Or I'm not sure. I'm honestly a little puzzled by that one. So I'm not going to say, boy, he means that guy, because I'm not sure who he means. I'm not even sure what he means.
Perkins, what do you make of this?
Well, it would narrow it right down if he said that they have great numbers.
Not a lot.
Because there aren't a lot of Maple Leafs or who have great numbers. Let's put it that way.
If it's the Leafs,
If it's the Leafs or Raptors, for that matter, have great numbers.
Well, so. I mean, you start thinking about, okay, is he talking about a guy like a Kessel, or is he talking about Jermaine Defoe because of, apparently Defoe's desire to get out of Toronto? I mean, is this an attack on MLSE? What do you make of it, Kenny?
I think he's talking about the Leafs. Because I think the conversation was kind of steering toward the Leafs when he made the comments. But like Steven says, a lot of the time spent in last night's kind of seminar was spent on advanced stats. Now, is he talking about guys with great Corsi numbers and bad character? Is he talking about your traditional stats, goals, and assists numbers and bad character? So put it this way, there's a lot of easy outs for Tim Lewicki if he wants to backtrack on it. But then again, what he said when he kind of threw the mic down and when he said about MLSE thinking they're all this and all that, and he's kind of telling them, no, you're not all this and all that. I don't think he's going to backtrack too much. And I think he was definitely speaking about somebody rather specific. I'd like to know who, though. I don't really know who.
Okay. Is this Lewicki firing with all guns on his way out of town? Is this Tim Lewicki just being honest while he is still in command of that ship?
This is the MLSE part we're talking about now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounded dead honest to me. It really didn't seem gratuitous. You know, I think what he said sounded like exactly what you would say if you're Tim Lewicki, arrived in Toronto, you end up in this organization that has, an extraordinary self-regard because they've been really successful at the box office. They've made loads of money. And, he walks in and says, you haven't won anything, and it's a great market, anybody could do it, right?
He's certainly contributed to that outlook. You know, he's the guy in charge. If the organization has a problem, his fingerprints got to be on some of it.
But he sounded like every Canadian who's not a Leafs fan. That's exactly what people say about the Leafs. Why do they think they're so good? They don't win anything. And I don't mean to narrow it down just about the Leafs, because I know MLSE is more than that. But to me, it sounds like every Canadian that kind of, when a Saturday night rolls around, they laugh at the Leafs. Look at them. They're trotting out some guy from the 1981 team, and they're giving him an honor, and that team won whatever games. To me, he sounded like that, and he tried to give this organization kind of a quick lecture going, guys, you gotta look at this from another perspective. And I think he nailed it in that comment.
The problem, I guess, that I have in trying to analyze this is trying to answer a question that's unanswerable, and that is this Tim Lewicki, who knows he's leaving, who no longer has any stake in covering anything up or being the good corporate guy, does Tim Lewicki make this statement we're not already aware that Tim Lewicki could be gone next week, next month, or next year?
He has said a lot of stuff, you know, since during the time he was here before he decided he didn't want to be here anymore. It's not like he hasn't said things that got him into, could have been perceived to be controversial it just seems consistent kind of with the guy. I don't think it's scorched earth. That may still be to come. Let's see. When he actually is walking out the door and said, hey, this is why I left. But I say that comment about MLSE, and I think Ken's right. That's, number one, I think it's true.
Yes.
You know, number two, I think, you know, it is something that, you know, people on the outside of that organization see probably better than people on the inside of that organization, which is, you know, again, there's this weird sense of kind of manifest destiny about a group that doesn't do anything.
It's like when Sonny and Red West had to leave Elvis. Elvis, we can't be a part of this anymore.
I didn't see that one coming, by the way.
Well, you know, for me. Elvis, we can't sit around and watch you do this to yourself anymore. And Elvis, oh, this man, everything's all good, man. And no, Elvis, this isn't all good. And it's kind of like that for me, because MLSE,
it's like a rotting drug addict? Is that what you're saying?
No, but they're in their own world, right? And nobody thinks the Leafs are as great as MLSE does. And For the 75% of Canadians who do not like the Leafs, or the 70% of Canadians who do not like the Leafs, they sit around going, what? You guys haven't won anything in 50 years. What are you blowing horns about and blowing your own trumpet for? Take it back a notch. And I think that's what Lewicki saw.
MLSE is fat Elvis. I think this is the greatest thing ever.
There we go. It's been established. MLSE fat Elvis. Wow. But I think Lewicki, he's speaking, he wouldn't have said this 6 months ago, but yeah, he's speaking as a guy who doesn't care. And there was no PR twist on that. It was just, I think these are just his unfiltered thoughts. He knows he's out. So you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer.
Yeah. And the context too, right? He's speaking to a university. It's, you know, I've heard other guys speak in those situations where they are more forthright than they might be. It's not like he thinks it's off the record, I would assume. I assume he understood on the record, right?
I think he knew exactly.
But there is, you know, in that setting sometimes, guys are going to feel more compelled to tell the truth.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
There's lots of speculation about a rift that has developed between Lewicki and Larry Tannenbaum. I cannot sit here and tell you that I have any specifics of it, other than I've heard it repeatedly over and over again from people whose opinion or position to know I respect. There's even suggestion that Lewicki may not last but a few more days in Toronto rather than stay until next June. What significance should we attach to that, Perk? Is this Lewicki trying to expedite his exit?
Yeah, once you set an exit date, you're leaving. There's no, I mean, in my opinion, once you set an exit date, you've gone. You've checked out mentally. whether it's, you know, the end, like a ball player who knows he's going at the end of the season, or a hockey player who knows he's leaving, getting out of town at the end of the season. Once you check out, you're checked out mentally. And I guess, you know, he's going on to the, he's looking for his next job anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He's going somewhere else and doing something similar, but for someone else.
Chris Johnson has a great piece up on Sportsnet.ca. I'll plug it, talking about Leiwicki maybe taking on StubHub and going into that line of business. So he, and maybe this just fuels things up, because I don't, you know more about business than me, Bob, but if he gets canned before June 30th, doesn't that mean he might have to get a buyout? I don't know how that would work, but why not just say whatever you want? If they fire you, they fire you.
Well, they can afford it.
Well, we can only speculate on what Leiwicki has planned next. I'd be surprised. I know that he's been quoted as saying he'd like to run his own company and do and be independent. But I also continue to hear that his destiny is with the Clippers in Los Angeles. And the latter makes a lot of sense. Their new owner is looking for somebody to run the franchise. He has acknowledged that, and they need somebody at the helm. It is one of the largest media markets in North America. If you look at what has happened with the Dodgers, to some extent with the Lakers, there is certainly an opportunity with the Clippers to build some sort of a media wing empire. If you also look at what happened, what Leiwicki's past was with AEG and building LA Live and all those things, I'm sure if you're the owner of the LA Clippers, you're looking at all that kind of stuff and saying, well, here's a guy who can help me in a number of different areas. Now, could both be true? Could Leiwicki form his own company and then essentially have that company do the work for the Clippers? It seems a little awkward, but I think that's doable too. Of greater interest isn't it in his best interest to get out of here as fast as possible?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as fast as I can get out of here, I'm going to go.
And one other thing about L.A. isn't that's apparently where his wife wants to be, too.
100%.
So
already is.
Yeah. That was all part of the equation, I'm sure.
Oh, no, he's gone.
Right.
What he winds up doing is still open for some debate. Will he ultimately land back in L.A.? I don't think there's another gig out there anywhere that he'd be interested in, but...
well, again, what he's saying
that's
is
on the, in the market
is that he wants to start something. But I got to say, I'm way less interested in where he winds up than what he leaves behind. That's to me the interesting thing is what he's left behind.
I mean, can any good come of Tim Leiwicki publicly voicing his observations as he or before he departs?
Good in what sense? Aside from
might make him feel better.
Yeah, and it's good for us.
Awareness for the public, a cleansing, if you will.
If you have to think, if you're in charge of the Leafs or if you're in charge of the Raptors, you're talking to your guys and you're going to have to say, look, he's on his way out. It doesn't matter what he says. He's not the boss anymore. He's the boss in name only right now. So listen to me. Don't listen to him.
Fans don't want to hear it. Fans don't want to hear that bad stuff. Fans want the fairy tale.
Yeah,
fans always want to know that the great next player's coming. Everything's going to be great. We're aces here.
Don't you sweat.
Everything's good here. Nobody wants the president of the team to come out and say this, and this. We got a bunch of no character guys who may score a lot of goals. People don't want to hear that. This guy, I don't think he's very popular with the fan base anyway. He's got there's kind of a big hat, no cattle, you know. Aspect to him.
Soccer folks like him.
But I wonder if that's changed now.
But that's probably
given all the Defoe stuff.
Yeah. Well, two things. The team is in complete and utter free fall and may not make the playoffs.
That's a given, right?
Well,
right.
But that's there.
And they got a coach every week.
Yeah.
They've already changed their coach. And Defoe probably won't play again. But even if he does, there's no expectation that this is anything more than a failed experiment. And long-term, he's going to be with Queen's Park Rangers or somebody else back in the Premier League.
There's
no doubt about that, is there?
I think Defoe coming here had Leiwicki all over it. And if Leiwicki leaves, 100%. Why is Defoe going to stay?
Oh, I don't know. And I mean, do you think the two are tied? I'm not sure they are. I think Defoe looks at it. I think two things happen. I mean, Defoe had been relegated to a part-time player with Spurs. At that point in his career, he gets an opportunity to come to North America, wake a whack a dough, and comes in here, doesn't really know perhaps what he's sitting on, finds a level of soccer that is below his expectations, finds an organization that is filled with flaws. And I don't mean MLSE as much as I mean TFC. And says, you know, I tried it. I don't like it. I want to go home.
Oh, it's kind of like if you take a nice job across the street, you think you can save the day and turn that factory around, and you get in and you say, wow, this is way more of a mess than I thought it was.
I think it's less that, you know, he played, they played well when he was fit.
They sure did.
He played well when he was fit. So, you know, it's not like it was a terrible team when he was in uniform. It was a pretty good team when he was in uniform. He got hurt. But, you know, it's, you know, I think there's two things. One is that, you know, maybe the fit of playing in this league and in North America, which is a very different scene than playing in the Premiership, might not have. Not everybody has adapted very, you know, well to that. And the other thing is he smelled an opportunity there, that, you know, there was something to go back to that may not have existed when he agreed to this deal. So he comes over, actually plays really well. That helps his, you know, that, so his stock goes up. People over there.
Well, his former manager goes to Queens Park Rangers. Yep. He already has a relationship with him.
That's right. And so an opportunity presents itself to go back, play in, you know, one of the two or three best leagues in the world for a lot of money at home. You know, I think it's simple. And you know, it's not the first time it's happened. So I'm not sure that when you hang that one on anybody, really. It's just, that's just kind of the natural course of events in some ways.
All right. Let's move along. More MLSE-related news. Their bid to buy the, well, sort of their bid, to purchase the Buffalo Bills is unsuccessful. Not surprising to anybody who really thought about this, focused on it, that it seemed doomed to fail, especially when Terry Pegula announced his interest. You almost got the sense, or I always got the sense, that the only remote chance they would have is if nobody else came to the table on this thing. That almost any other bid would be accepted by the National Football League. Or failing that, at some point, somebody would demand that as part of the deal, a commitment is made in writing for this Toronto group to keep the team in Buffalo for an extended period of time.
Well, and there was, you know, there were enough poison pills in the Ralph Wilson will that essentially it was that, at least till 2020, right?
But we weren't sure that that existed.
No, you know, not until Ralph died. No,
yeah. So, so Pegula winds up buying the team for what, 1.4?
Mm-hmm. Yes, highest the highest price ever paid, right? So
until the next one.
Until the next one, but that's a lot of money for a football team in Buffalo.
There's an offshoot to this, and that is that I don't think I'm the only one who has heard that David Braley has whispered to those nearby that the absence of this group being successful, the withdrawal of interest by MLSE in purchasing the Toronto Argonauts has left Mr. Braley with almost nowhere to turn. And that there are many people believe that the next step for the Toronto Argonauts is Mr. Braley walking into the CFL offices and handing them the keys to the Argos and saying, it's now yours. I give. What do you make of that? Is this the likelihood?
It's a weird football town, though, isn't it? Like, let's start with that, right? Because you now have a city that has, that, you know, rejected the whole Bills in Toronto thing for a variety of reasons.
Right. Most of them good.
Have rejected the Toronto Argonauts for a variety of reasons. The university football here doesn't exist. Well, they're two terrible teams, you know, with a mostly terrible history, at least in the short term. No one goes to games at York. No one games. It's the only place on this continent where there is no football that anyone cares about in terms of life. There's lots of people watching on TV. But, you know, this Toronto is, you know, and it's going to wind up with no professional football. You know, I think that's the course we're heading down.
Do you really believe that? I mean, for 40 years, I've been hearing two things constantly in this city. The Argos are doomed. And the NFL is coming. I've been hearing both things for 40 years.
Nowhere to play, though. It's just about the stadium.
I understand that. You know, it doesn't look good. It hasn't looked good before. Something's always happened. I don't know what it will be this time, but something has always happened.
Yeah, I don't think – I guess the difference I was in, Bob alluded to it there. I'm not sure David Braley believes something's going to happen this time. Well, so that's because of the stadium issue. And that's
– You think the league would go without a Toronto team?
If they guys, but there's nowhere to play.
They may have to. I mean, to me, this is sadly, there's no buzz. Oh, you guys know there's no buzz about the Toronto Argonauts in this town. What's the season ticket base? Maybe 3,000 people? I mean, they're a 3-7 team in a crappy division. They're playing in a place where people say football's no fun to watch. Nobody cares about them. There's no buzz. If I'm Mr. Braley, I wouldn't want to be losing cash. I mean, he's got a Grey Cup in Vancouver this year, so he can make money off that, but he's not going to get a Grey Cup in Toronto for a while because he just had it here a couple of years ago. I mean, maybe they hope that someone down east makes a stadium, or perhaps they can move them to Quebec City and someone there will buy them, because I don't see a market for anyone buying them in Toronto and keeping them here and just losing cash. Why would any businessman want to do that?
Even if you could do that, though, you got to have a place to play.
In Quebec or in Atlantic Canada?
Yeah, but or here.
Quebec, you could play at Laval University because they get, what, 20,000 there maybe?
Well, no, it's not that big. It's about half that.
And there's nowhere in Atlantic Canada you can
No, play there's now. Nowhere in Atlantic Canada. And, you know, to get a stadium built for 9 dates a year with public money is going to be tricky.
Based on what I know about living in Nova Scotia, they're not getting public money for a stadium down there. That's not happening. You can't get public money to fix a road down there.
Yeah.
So what are we all saying? Toronto Argonauts are gone?
Well, you got to look at, if you look at the time frame here, if we believe the even if the grass and the dome thing is delayed a little bit, but the Rogers Centre obviously does not work for this team.
No.
It doesn't work.
16 or 17.
Yeah.
Combine that with turf not working for the Blue Jays.
That's right. You know? But the timeline in terms of, like, even if there was some kind of pie in the sky stadium project, and there isn't one with, the Pan Am ship has sailed and BMO's going in a different direction, and again, I don't think the feds are going to run here and throw $20 million at him to convert BMO for football. So, so you're on a two-year timeline here now. Well, you can't build a stadium get it done in 2 years.
But, and this is way out there, but hypothetically, could you split the new Tim Hortons field with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and have a game there every week? One's the home game for the Argos,
sure,
one's the home game for the Tiger Cats.
Who's going to go to the Toronto Argonauts
games? And that's
games
just it. Who's going to drive 45 minutes to Hamilton, depending on what time of day it is? So what do you do? I'm just throwing that out there, going, how do you save this team? And to me, that maybe you consider that, but correct. Who's going to go there?
Yeah, I'm sure the Tiger Cats would be happy to rent them the stadium. They'd take the revenue. That you could build... you can build a temporary facility around something the way they did in BC while they were doing the refit on BC Place. But that there's a cost involved in that. It's not very satisfactory, the setup. But you don't have a university field even where you could do that here. I guess you could do it at York. You couldn't do it at U of T.
Yeah, you can't do anything down the road here.
So and somebody again would have to pay the money to build that facility, that temporary facility, and I'm not sure who that's going to be. So I know what you mean, Burke. That like since since the early 1980s, almost, that's been a conversation. Right. The Argos have been doomed. And they did go bankrupt, right? And they have been in without an owner. But the difference this time is, you got to play somewhere.
Yeah.
And when the MLSE BMO thing fell through, and I think that is linked into the NFL thing a little bit, Bob, because you talked about that. Would have given them somebody there maybe a reason to throw them a lifeline. There's no reason for anybody to throw them a lifeline anymore, except Bell.
Because they have a vested interest owning the rights, right?
Yeah, but
and having paid a significant amount for it. And I mean, and maybe Bell looks at it the way the National Football League now looks at Los Angeles. We all thought it was unthinkable that the second largest city in America, the entertainment hub of the United States, arguably the world, could not have an NFL team, where once it had, at least for a couple of periods of time, two, and now none. And what is this going to do to the NFL? What does this do to television viewership? And how fast can you get a team back in L.A.? It's been a long time since L.A. had a team. And you know what? NFL seems to be doing fine. Thanks a lot.
Highest rated sporting event in Canada last week was Winnipeg, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Right? So a million plus. Right? So and if you'd watched that broadcast, you would have seen ads for a restaurant chain called Humpty's.
Right.
Which has no outlets east of Manitoba.
Ed Whalen, by the way, used to do a fantastic ad for Humpty's with Bret Hart. Get out of here! He kicks him out at the end.
But it's great because there's the economics of the CFL, right? You can draw a million viewers,
which is more
than that great big Blue Jay audience this week, and essentially play to an audience that is exclusively West Manitoba West.
And I'll tell you, having worked in Calgary, having worked in Edmonton, I mean this with the utmost respect, I think the CFL could survive without a team in Toronto, and they'd be just fine because when you're out West and the Argos come to town, it's kind of, Who are the Stamps playing this week? Oh, they're playing the Argos. Because if the Stamps are playing the Eskimos or the Stamps are playing the Riders, you're pumped, mm-hmm. right? Because you know there's going to be tons of people from Saskatchewan in the crowd. There's going to be that Edmonton-Calgary thing going. But when they play the Argos, it's, oh, the Argos are coming to town. But you still go, and there's buzz in Calgary, and there's buzz in Edmonton. There's no buzz in this town. And I think it could survive without Toronto. It would stink too for Argos fans, and I'd feel for them, but I think it could survive.
I've thought for a long time. I'm intrigued by what you guys think. And it's been years and years and years, as Perk alluded to, that, you know, we periodically look for alternatives. What can you do? How do you fix this thing? Cinnamon and Sokolowski tried to get a new stadium built. They tried it at U of T. Couldn't do that. Tried at York. That fell through. They had the soccer guys aligned with them. Then the soccer guys got sucked in by Larry Tannenbaum, and right. and they, you know, pulled a turncoat thing and went with MLSE for the other place, left the Argos out to dry.
I think there are alternative versions of that history, but I'll let that one go.
Whatever. Nonetheless, you start thinking, all right, there's no place to go in Toronto. There's no agenda to be in Toronto. Rather than fold this franchise, Quebec is maybe someday, but not yet. Mm-hmm. Halifax, maybe someday, but not yet. There's no other place that's ready, that is has ownership and a stadium and the interest, the wherewithal and the interest to take the Toronto Argonauts and put them in their community. So now you think, what about Vaughan? You know, this community, a growing community, which for those of you across the country who might not be aware, Vaughan was an incorporation of several communities that is now a city, and they like to say the city above Toronto. They ran ads about it for a long time, spent a lot of money promoting it. It is growing. It is a vibrant community. It is still really more of a bedroom community than a city to its own, unto its own, but it clearly wants to be.
Mm-hmm. It went after the casino, remember?
It wants to be a city.
Right.
And I hope I'm not being inadvertently disparaging to them. Would there be a movement there?
Well, if Vaughan wants to build him a stadium, or sure. if Mississauga does, right. or Whitby does, or Oshawa
well,
does.
Well, Mississauga's different, because Mississauga has stuck their toe in sports in terms of putting Mississauga on the front of a team name, and it's failed miserably. Mississaugans think of themselves as Torontonians.
Well, again, Vaughan, they can have the team tomorrow if they want to build a stadium.
Yeah, right. It's available. Yeah, if you build
that.
It, we will come. We'll be there tomorrow. Yeah.
Is there any sense that could happen?
I haven't heard anybody say it. Again, it's such a lot of money to throw into something that's going to have so little use.
Who's at home in Vaughan to go to time of the game? They're fighting traffic getting home from downtown Toronto.
And the Pan Am thing again. They missed that, right?
Sure. The only thing that, you know, when a few years ago when Woodbine was talking about, you know, rebuilding and putting in one of those Woodbine Live things.
Yeah. Well, they were going to do
the biggest piece of undeveloped land in the GTA.
Second.
Which Woodbine owns right up there. They had talked about putting an arena in for things like figure skating, curling, mm-hmm. maybe junior hockey. Not an NHL-sized arena. And one of the other things that was you know, thrown out there was, well, if we don't go to arena, maybe we could put in a little 20,000-seat football.
And you're basically Vaughan. That's basically Vaughan anyway.
And this is the kind of people that Bob's talking about. I think this is the kind of area. The Argo fans would certainly go there because it's right at the confluence of three highways.
And they draw a lot of 905ers
draw a lot of 905ers. There's that possibility. I'm not saying that that's still on the table because that Woodbine Live project died in the economy about a year and a half ago. But that land's still sitting there, and there's people with ideas up there. And maybe, you know, you take what you're talking about in that area. Here's one place you could do it.
The only point of difference that I would that with Perk, and I mean, I'm very familiar with the history of that land. It needs a champion.
Yeah.
And the champion is going to come from one of two places, either a potential owner or a political group.
Our former mayor, yeah.
Like a city.
You need some.
Like with the municipality of Vaughan, the mayor's office and the city council in Vaughan, would they get behind this? Right. Who champions the project at Woodbine?
Right. That's the
part
question.
Of Etobicoke. Yeah. You know, it's
that's the question.
And I think who champions this Argos project of any kind? Because my question, my thing is, nobody cares, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I know they have fans, and I go to a few games from time to time. I haven't gone to any this year, but there's no buzz, and people don't like to lose money, and usually the owners who like to lose money are just diehard fans who just want to be in there. So who's that diehard fan with a ton of cash who's willing to lose money? And I don't think.
But even if that guy's there, they still got to have that place.
Have to find a place to play.
And,
yeah.
And then again, if you look at the window here and believe that the dome conversion is going to happen, you know, in 2016 or 2017, you know, you can't be kind of spitballing this stuff now. Like someone would have to actually be out there saying, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to start raising the money for this and we're going to start working government over. And there's none. There's crickets out there.
It makes you wonder whether the outgoing commissioner of the Canadian Football League, who would be much closer to all this than any of us in terms of inside information, sees the handwriting on the wall and says, time to get out of here.
Don't want to be around for that one.
Don't want to have to adjudicate that one. Because remember, I don't think for a second the league is going to operate the Toronto Argonaut franchise as the league has operated franchises in the past. This team loses between $6 and $8 million a year, and I don't think the other owners would have the stomach for it, and because it has no end game.
What are the Gliebermans doing?
We don't care, and we hope not to find out, I think. 29 before the hour, we'll take the break. When we come back, the Blue Jays are in the conversation, but are they in the playoff race? We'll address that when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Chances are that the opener, the Leafs home opener, actually is Fat Elvis Day.
Well,
you'd be ready, wouldn't you?
I have my own Elvis suit. Thank you, Mom. Great Christmas gift a few years ago. My brother actually wore it on stage doing stand-up one night. My brother's a stand-up comedian, so they had this little show at Christmas where they all just kind of did their own thing. So my brother wore the Fat Elvis suit on stage and just didn't reference it the whole time.
So the jumpsuit with the big belt buckle or the not the gold lamé?
Sideburns?
I got the sideburn wig, but I had the cape too. So my brother did stand up the whole time and just didn't refer to it. It was awesome.
It's a very talented family. I don't know if you knew this.
Well, and after every joke, he'd kind of he'd go like that, but he'd just go like that. He didn't say he was Elvis or didn't really refer to it. It was awesome.
Who do you think got most of the talent there, Brent?
I think that is a difficult one. What do you think?
My sister Katie. Kate got most of the talent. She's a dog trainer. She's the smart one of the bunch of us. She chose not to deal with us. She deals with canines instead.
The Toronto Blue Jays did not play last night, did not win nor lose last night, and remain mathematically alive.
3.5 out with 17 to go.
You say that with great enthusiasm.
Because it's true. That's the number.
And it means nothing, really. I saw a statistic that if they have 17 left, I guess I'm told.
Yep.
17 left.
So if they go 14-3, they have a 49-point-something% chance of making the postseason. Now that puts it in perspective.
The problem with all these graphs is, and I would guess that they got like a 5% chance now.
Didn't they have an 89% chance in July?
Yeah, it was 92% in July.
Exactly.
But the problem with all these is that I remember the year they were 3.5 ahead with seven games to play.
1987, when they would have had a 99.9%.
They had 99.8% chance. So all these graphs and charts are fun and they're
fine. But there were two things that were true there. Number one, it was the Tigers who caught them, correct?
Yes. Correct.
And they had to play the Tigers along with the Milwaukee Brewers, correct, I think, during that last week. Correct. So. And it was a two-team race. Yes. This is a six- or seven-team race.
It's a five-team race because I absolutely refuse to believe the Yankees are in it. God only knows the way they're playing.
They're half a game back of the
unbelievable the way they played last night.
Yeah.
They lost this afternoon.
Right.
But I just can't see them in it.
Is Oakland now come back to the
Oakland
pack?
Oakland has
enough?
Come back to the pack. But here's the situation. Yeah. Oakland plays Seattle this weekend.
Somebody's got to win.
So now you got two wins and two losses to figure into the mix. Right.
The key about 87 was only one other team.
Or four wins, four losses. Yeah. That's right. And Detroit's playing Cleveland, and they're dead even with Cleveland, right?
Yeah.
And they're three behind Detroit in the loss column. Okay, now they're, you win your game, you're keeping pace with somebody. That's all you're doing is keeping pace with somebody. So, it's very tough. But
it's
got to
be tough.
Win.
Yeah,
you got to win. You got to win.
No one's saying likely.
Hope, right? Like you were talking about the last segment. Nobody wants to hear the truth. You want hope from your sports teams.
And the truth is, if they're 3.5 behind with 7 to play, I still won't be. You won't be entirely throwing the shovel on them. You know what I mean?
Entirely. Yeah. And again, like the Oakland A's chances of making the postseason about 6 weeks ago would have been
99.99999%,
and they've been in free fall ever since. With a really good team.
At the end of the Jays' last game, they had a better record than Oakland post trade deadline. Didn't see that coming.
Sure, but I think everybody did.
You know what? All you can do is win tonight. You go from there. There's no sense even getting caught up in all of it. It's fun to watch, and it's mildly intriguing. It'd be a lot more intriguing if they were one game out. But hey, give them credit; they're winning.
And
they're
the
winning.
One thing that they have, the two things they have going for them are, they have four against Seattle, who is one of the teams in a pretty serious situation ahead of them, and they get their last three, I believe, against Baltimore. Baltimore will have clinched by then.
Yep.
Baltimore's got giant holes. You put Chris Davis with the 25 games on top today. Hardy's hurt. I think he played today, but he just doesn't look good. Machado's out for the year. Davis, there's your three best fielders.
Weeders has been gone for the whole year.
But they're still winning like crazy.
Crazy.
They have been winning, and they got a big cushion. But I'm just saying that last weekend of the season,
they're not trotting anybody out there.
They'll probably set up their rotation.
Yeah.
They're going to be setting up their rotation and having the starters go 4-5, go 70 pitches or whatever the number is. They won't have the pedal to the metal, is what I'm saying.
Right.
That last week.
Even tonight.
Okay, let's balance all that great optimism from Perkins.
Well, I'm just saying.
With this reality, that of the teams in this race, whether it's 5, 6, or 7, depending on what you believe, the Toronto Blue Jays will play the toughest schedule of all of them.
Because
in terms of teams' winning percentage.
Because, Tampa this weekend is the last team they play with a losing record, right?
Yes.
They go to New York. Then they go to Baltimore. Then they're home to Seattle, home to Baltimore. Is that right?
I think that's right. Yeah.
So.
But again, Baltimore, it could be a team with a winning record that's home and cooled out, essentially, right? So that is a factor. But no, look, they're going to have to win. And they're not going to get to play the Cubs every night, unfortunately.
And Cubs were the worst looking team I think I've seen this year.
Oh, by far.
They were just hideous.
Yeah, they had some decent starting pitching, but other than that, my God, they were awful.
So let me give you, we've spent some time talking about what kind of difference this team, how different this team will be next spring, who you keep, who you don't, who you try and keep, who you don't care about, what are your real needs now, have the needs changed since the beginning of the year, and I think we would all acknowledge they have. There are some very good things here, some young pitchers who've come out of nowhere that you are starting to say, well, maybe you just throw them right into the rotation. There's a bunch of variables here. Let me just give you the most unlikely scenario of all. Brunt will love this.
Okay.
Not only did the Toronto Blue Jays make the postseason, they win the World Series.
Okay.
How does that change what you do for next year?
I'm not sure it changes it that much at all. You still, just like every team does, you go out in the offseason, you're still trying to address your weak points, right? Because, if they do that, then, we are way beyond the lightning in a bottle phase here, right? That's an act of God if that happens, given the Cabrera's out for the year and, given everything else. I think you just count your lucky stars. And then, remember, again, between 92 and 93, as you well know, Bob, they turned the team over.
Mm-hmm. 12 of the 25.
So, I think you'd still be looking at your young pitchers next year. Two of them are already in the rotation, so you're halfway there with those guys anyway. Colby Rasmus won't be back in any case, even if they win the World Series, unless, well, you know, who knows? Jansen's not coming back.
I think the problem with that scenario is if that did happen, they came back and won the World Series, you'd probably wake up in mid-May working on a railway in northern New Brunswick and saying, how do I got here? Because you'd be partying so hard that unlikely scenario actually happened. But, yeah.
There's anything wrong with northern New Brunswick.
Right. No, I love northern New Brunswick. Go Bathurst T10. Opening their season tonight against the Halifax Mooseheads. But if you did win that way, you obviously these four young pitchers would have to be studs. And you can't go in with three or four young guys in your starting rotation next year. You just can't.
I guess the point I'm trying to get at here, Perk, and I'll throw this at you, and that is, and we've seen this many times before, and I've alluded to it, and it's not a baseball thing. It's an all sports thing. A team that is out of it plays their asses off in the last 30 days of the season. And organizations almost invariably
get fooled
right, by what they're seeing after the horse has escaped and the barn door is closed.
5 years in a row there.
2006, yeah. Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to get at. And maybe they don't have to win I was giving you the more ridiculous scenario. But, I mean, if this team wins 20 games even in the month of September but falls short,
right,
is there a danger here that they kind of go, we're closer than we thought?
Well, unfortunately, I don't see where they make all these changes because they're in right now for around 94, 96 mm-hmm. million next year for the first nine guys. Most of the top salaries are untradeable. Nobody's going to want Reyes in his $22 million. He can't play short anymore.
Nope.
Nobody's going to want Burley at $20 million.
You'd have to take back some money.
You'd have to take back money.
Yeah.
And Dickey goes to what, 15, 16?
You could trade Dickey.
Possibly you could trade Dickey.
Yeah, no, there's
possibly.
I think you could trade Dickey.
But you've got a ton of money committed for next year. And, you know, where are you going to, you know, that doesn't include Cabrera, whom they would love to get, but I'm not so sure they're going to be able to.
Yeah,
So what's going to change? You're going to have to give Goins and Goes their chance strictly because of economics.
See,
I think the second base situation is going to be interesting because that, again, that was one that we were talking about last offseason.
Right, right.
Look, the pitching situation is going to, where that's going to go, right? Okay, we know you're going to have, and if they can unload one of the two guys, they may.
Yeah, I think they would.
But, you know, again, half your rotation is going to be Hutchinson and Stroman, right?
Well, I think Hap's done himself a lot of good this year.
They got to pick
Hap's
up that
made himself
option.
A lot of money this year.
Yeah, he has, and that's a good price you get him for.
And you're not bringing back Morrow at that $10 million?
No, but no one else is either. So you're still throwing 99, right?
Somebody
will
give him some kind of incentive laden thing.
Or he's closing for you next year.
the thing that's intrigued me, and I heard, I'm not sure who I heard say this. It might have been Siddle. If it isn't, I apologize to Joe. But he was saying, you look at the way Sanchez has been pitching. He's been terrific in 1-2 inning blips. And this is a guy who didn't have the stats in the minor leagues. What if you made him your Mariano Rivera?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden said, we're going to forget about that part of the bullpen for next 10 years. Because this kid, the way he throws with his stuff, lights out. There's a possibility.
Rivera was supposed to be a starter, right?
So correct.
Who knows?
But I'm just saying, what if somebody boldly said, because nobody develops short relievers.
We got to get out of here. We got to take the break. Let everybody walk around, drink some coffee, stay awake, or do whatever you have to do. We'll be back in just a few minutes. The roundtable will continue. Ray Rice, Roger Goodell, and that fiasco. Still news trickling in and lots to discuss. The roundtable continues. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.